Welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and delighted today to be joined by Dan and Ford. Welcome, guys, to Endpoint.
Hi. Thank you.
Now, you guys are working on this interesting project. It's kind of codenamed Dublin. And a lot of people have heard about Dublin, maybe curious about it. I've been to Dublin. It's a nice place. but no, we're talking about the project here. So Dan, what is it? And the goal today is, what is it and why should I care?
This is the introduction, so this is the entry point. Think of Dublin as extensions to the IIS hosting environment, focused on WCF and WF, so middle-tier services, middle-tier applications, and we want to make Windows Server and IIS a great hosting environment for those kind of services. So that's the really large thing. As a secondary part of that, we really want ISVs to have an easier time building apps that include especially WF and WCF. And so we think about those two things, ISVs and developers and IT pros, to make the experience of using middle-tier services just way easier and way better.
Okay, but wait a minute, though. I mean, we've already been able... You could host WCF and IIS before, right? You could host workflows in there, too. So what...
That's true.
What does this add that we didn't have before?
One of the first things you can't do, even... Let's just start with services. So we're in WCF services. You can't easily see what's happening to the services. Do you know, for example, if you've got services running on multiple machines, where they're getting activated, how many are getting activated? What's the status of those? Are you getting errors? You might get some. You can go to logs. You can go to system.diagnostics. You might even get some things in the Windows event log that might help you, but it's a little hard to figure out what's happening with your apps. And so one of the first things that we want to do, and we're doing now, is make it easy to see what's happening. Just code services, WCF services. Can I see what's happening? Do I know what's happening? What's getting activated? What status? What kind of errors? That kind of thing is just right off the bat. So I should have a simple dashboard that tells me what's happening with my services.
Okay, and so Ford, you were saying, Dan said it attaches to IIS. So how is that, you know, we got this monitoring capability, this surface in IIS somehow?
Yeah, we're using and extending the IIS manager tool set to surface a bunch of functionality that we think will be very interesting to middle-tier developers and IT professionals that are working with controlling middle-tier apps or services as part of their application.
Okay, but you know, somebody might say, well, hey, I'm not doing HTTP. I want to do TCP or MSMQ bindings or whatever.
Yeah,
I
mean,
it works for that too. Huh?
So it turns out that underneath IIS and IIS 7, there's a layer in the operating system called WAS, or the Windows Activation Service, or Windows Process Activation Service.
That's right.
And it is actually what WCF actually plugs into to actually activate processes on different protocols.
Okay, so by activation, just for those who aren't in the know, right? So I've created my little WCF service. It's just sitting there, just waiting, right? Yeah. It's not running, though. So a message comes along for it. We need something to say, hey, service, start up, and here's a message for you. That's what this thing does.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
And it's got a config, associated config, so we know to get the right service to the right place and run the config so it's configured in the right way, and then the service will start. As opposed to, say, a lot of the old ways of doing things where we'd either just run an executable or run an NT service. So that thing is running all the time, waiting for traffic, opening a port. Now there are a number of things can come in on the same port, nothing's running, and the process activation service will now run the appropriate services and route things to the right place, get the service up and running. That's why, for example, sometimes you'll see you want to start a service. The first time you try to access a service, it can be substantially slower because now I'm actually activating the service for the first time. I'm getting the environment set up. I'm doing all that kind of stuff. The next messages that you might be sending to that service might be really snappy.
Okay. So now WCF has had a kind of rich tracing infrastructure in it, you know, but it was kind of, you know, very geeky thing. There was no nice tooling over it. You sort of had to go in and tweak config files, and you know. So you guys have taken and leveraged this then?
Well, let's look at this from the whole picture. Again, for every service, there's a requirement to get data out. So we call that just instrumentation. How are we getting data out? Can we get the right kind of data? Can we get high value events so we know what's happening? And that's just the instrumentation side. And then the next question is, how do I access data once I get it out? And the answer in, say, 3.5 is, well, you have system.diagnostics and you have some perf counters as well to get some data. So what's wrong with that in some of the older versions is it works, but there's a performance penalty. Performance counters has some memory penalties and some performance hits. System.diagnostics has had a non-trivial hit to your service and your application performance. So, of course, a lot of people don't use it. They don't turn it on if it's going to be have an impact, substantial impact on performance. So one of the things that we've done is in the framework, we've put a lot of effort into making that a lot better, make the perf counters a lot better, more performant so that you can access perf counters and use them, make them more usable. Also, let's have, instead of always going through system.diagnostics, we have another path going through ETW, much more performant. So now all of your events, and this is true for WCF and WF, it's a workflow and services, all kinds of different services, all of the tracing, all of the events that you want to see are all coming out through ETW now.
And ETW is?
The basic Windows event mechanism.
Okay, yeah, so it's a very, very high performance event tracing.
Yes.
You know, passes through a really fast kernel pipe, so you don't bog down the system with
the
events, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And the library has actually been tweaked and tuned for more performance, and so it's also consistent, and a lot of other things use ETW. So now you're going to get ASP.NET. We'll have some things on some of the channels in ETW. So we're leveraging things that are actually much more commonly used. System Diagnostics is as well, but that's much more of a developer tool as well. So one of the things we're focusing on is having more of an IT pro analysis, so we have the analyst channel in ETW, and we're leveraging that, which is usually fewer events, higher value, really letting you know so the things that you really care about in case you want to take action. Then all of that should be surfaced in tooling. So we focused a lot on the instrumentation. The pipe is ETW. All this is in the framework, so this is things that we're putting in the framework from the sort of Dublin perspective, just to make the basic framework work better for us. And then in Dublin, we add a database, and so we actually take events from the ETW pipe, we put them in the database, and now we've got rich tooling that will allow you to do a bunch of slicing and dicing and kind of nice usable views on top of that database.
Okay. So now WCF and WF are just kind of these lightweight engines, right? They were designed to sort of live in any process and didn't really come with a lot of, or basically no runtime tooling, okay, right, to help IT pros dealing with these systems in production.
So it's the config editor and the trace viewer, which we didn't really give credit to, but again, kind of to your point,
samples.
Is a little geeky and really kind of developer focused and also, very much about watching the internals of your service and figuring out, a lot of data about what's going on in your service, maybe far too much for what most people would need to troubleshoot problems.
So I think a lot of IT pros are going to be like, oh, finally, they gave me a tool, I mean, even simple things like, what are some of the things you want to do? Import an application, for example, or?
Let's start from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. Our tagline that we use a lot is, it just works.
So okay.
If you're, and this is especially true for durable services we haven't talked a lot about, and mostly that's for us, Workflow Foundations or WF. And so when you especially have durable services, just to get the thing to work and to get it up and running, you got to get the persistence provider, get the schema set up and the database set up, and then you got to get everything configured right.
Right.
So there's a whole series of steps just to get the thing to work, and then it's really hard to see what's happening in it. And so when we say it just works, what we want is you can hit F5 or control F5 and just deploy the thing, and it all just works out of the box. So Windows, as a great host, should just work for all of these services. And you should be able to just pull up in iNet Manager a dashboard without any additional steps and any work as an IT pro, and you can see it. You can also move things around, deploy things, import and export, getting to different boxes, but make sure you have the right config, and it all works. And so we are giving all of the tools to make it just work and really easy for developers and IT pros to first get things running, make it all work, but also to see what's happening. So it's the monitoring side, then there's things in hosting and setup and config and some of the persistence mechanisms when we get to durable services that have really we've really tried to move forward.
Yeah, so the durable services or workflows, long-running workflows, is a very interesting challenge for a lot of people because, now you've got this database that's kind of holding on to instances of workflows or services that have been invoked, and some of which are suspended, some are running, and really there wasn't a great, I guess there was no tooling experience before to tell, what's going on in that database, right? So it's a big problem. I think most people figured they would have to build their own tooling.
A lot of people do. In fact, the most common thing we hear from customers is that We're making them have to go do a whole bunch of work to develop their solution that they wish Microsoft would just do for them and just would have included with the platform somewhere. And some of that has to do with, you know, simple tooling to do very simple things. Like, I mean, you could have even started at a simpler thing, which is, we'll just enumerate the services on your box and show you what services are available.
Yeah.
We'll enumerate how many instances are running or in some sort of non-running state, but still hanging around. Yeah. And we'll let you take action on them. We'll let you start and stop instances, things like that.
So disable them.
Control.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, starts, it's really easy, especially, you know, you're at the PDC and you're talking to somebody about what Dublin is and you're starting to tell them what's doing. If you start there, they immediately go, oh yeah, I get it now.
Yeah.
I was missing all those things that I've kind of gotten used to or had some sort of corollary to in other products, including ASP.NET and others, and I was missing that for my services.
Or remember Complus.
Yes.
I was a PM on Complus many years ago. We had the little spinning ball. You could right-click, start, stop, and it was great.
We hear about the spinning ball a lot. when are you going to bring back the spinning ball?
That's not a bad way to think about it. We're going down that same pipe that we did in Complus for WebF and WCF, and then we'll end up in a similar, maybe better place in terms of what kind of tooling and dashboards and monitoring infrastructure you have for it. But in this case, one of the things that's really cool is we're tying that closely with what you do in IIS so that it's closely aligned with ASP.NET and IIS. And so it's all one thing. And it's not, oh, I have middle tier services here. I have my web tier here. It's really all in one tool. It's all one way to do things. It's all PowerShell, so you can script everything in the same way. And we use the same kind of paradigms. We think closely. We're pretty closely aligned with those teams and working closely with them. And so we're after that really unified, very simple, works out of the box experience.
You know, and the PowerShell stuff, I got to say, I totally love that. For the PDC, I made some videos of some of the hands-on labs. I made a video of Lab 6, which was your lab, for deploying and managing services. And, it was my first experience to work with the PowerShell with Dublin. And I was thinking, you know, this is phenomenal because, you know, when you're doing a project, you're doing a lot of, you know, build this, deploy it, test it out. Oh, we got to fix this, deploy it, test it out again. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, you know, oh, crud. If there was no PowerShell, it'd be like, copy these files over there. Now then you go into IIS, do this, do this, that.
Go to Notepad, make sure the configs are edited correctly.
Exactly.
Yes.
I just want to script the whole thing and, like, push a button. It all goes out there. It's great.
Well, because then the IT pro says, yeah, I got the document, but here's what I really do. I sysprep a whole bunch of an image. I put that on 29 virtual machines, and then I need to be able to move services to those machines in a simple script-based or whatever. I can plug it into my systems management tools and have that simple experience where I can get the services where I need them, get them up and running and configured correctly. And so we think that about that a lot. We want to add those scenarios so that you have a PowerShell-based scriptable experience where it all is just going to work, and you can do that.
It's a beautiful thing.
One other thing to point out is that a lot of the functionality that you want and use in IIS Manager that we're building, all of it is available through PowerShell scripts. That's a tenet that we have.
Yeah.
There's a couple places maybe where we go right at a database.
But rare.
But it's very rare. And most everything else you can actually script, and that's very appealing to folks that need to be able to automate tasks.
Yeah, and the beautiful thing is for those who are really geeky and want to get into PowerShell is then you can extend PowerShell, create your own commands, you can pipe things from one to the other. So you could do virtually anything right there in PowerShell.
So that's a big extensibility point, right, where folks will want to build on top of what we've done and build their own tool set or customized tool set, and they can use leverage our PowerShells along with their own.
Yeah,
we think of this in three different levels. The basic framework is the toolbox for developers mainly, and you can do almost anything you want with that toolbox. And our goal is to make that toolbox and the tools and the quality of the tools and the power of the tools is better and better. And we think it's awesome. I think most people say and agree that the toolbox itself is awesome. And for developers, that's great. Now there's two other experiences we want to enable on top of that, and this is a lot of the way we think in Dublin. First is for ISVs, that's true, I need tools, but I'd like some higher level tools. I want to do as little plumbing as I can. I want to focus on the value that I add on top of the basic infrastructure that you're going to give. So we, on top of, say, the toolbox for WF and WCF, we create what we think of as higher value components. One of those is the monitoring subsystem as a whole. So instead of saying, I could go to ETW, or I could go to system.diagnostics, or I could add code to trace things inside the framework, we give you a configurable monitoring infrastructure with the schema and the database all set up, so the ISV can say, great, I just know how to put that into my database infrastructure. Now I can turn on monitoring, and then I can use those through PowerShell or directly in the database, and now I have monitoring infrastructure that's easily configurable and extensible. So, and then on the other side, we have, for durable services, the persistence infrastructure, which is a larger component. Instead of having all of the infinite flexibility of the tools in the framework, we now give you a higher level component that's configurable and extensible, so that as an ISV you can say, great, I'll take this component and now I'll use that component in my larger solution. You just saved me a whole bunch of plumbing work that I don't have to do. Right. And then on top of that, we have what we think of as kind of an appliance for a lot of the IT pros and some of the devs that just want it to work. And so our It Just Works is, now let's tie it together in an experience that works out of the box in Windows, so that Windows is a great host for these services. But now I have tooling, and all the tools are connected in the right kind of way, and all the PowerShells are connected in exactly the right way. And so I don't have to do anything else. I just got my service, I deployed it, and now I can see through my dashboard, I can do monitoring control, I can change persistence, I can do all the things I need to do through the tools.
Cool. So, all right. So, I've got a toolbox with some nice PowerShell, some add-ins to Visual Studio or IIS rather. But you do have some Visual Studio components. You have some templates. So, when I spit a new Dublin project, right?
We're not completely done with that yet, but we're going to work really closely with the teams that own the templates in Visual Studio to make sure that our building services that work really well with Dublin is just there by default.
Okay.
We're trying really hard to not add any more templates. Right? Nobody wants more templates. Don't give me that choice. Do I have to do a Dublin service or not a Dublin service? There's no such thing. You just build your service.
It just works.
And it'll just work.
Okay.
Dublin.
All right. So I've got a host process, right? So that has this nice monitoring management capability. But now you guys have added some other things I think are kind of interesting, like a big problem people have is versioning of services. For example, I got my V1 service and I say, I made some changes, I'm going to roll out V2, but now I got all these people that still want to use V1, and well, what do I do? So this has been a problem. We just said to people before, hey, you go figure it out, we're not going to help you here, but you guys have some help for this, right?
We think this is a very interesting part of the vision for where we head, and the kind of things that customers talk to us a lot about. In fact, if you look at our services team that helps customers build solutions on top of the framework, they deal with this problem all the time, and they have a very interesting toolkit called MSE that enables people to deal with versioning and service virtualization and a number of things that are part of this. We're working with that team. We think that's a very interesting connection to Dublin. Most of what we would do for versioning support and for service virtualization, we're not doing a lot of that in V1 directly into the product, except for one major component we call the routing service. We used to call it the forwarding service, so some people will think of it in those terms, but it's effectively an easily configurable routing service that, even just with PowerShells, you can do all the configuration of this routing services. And with any XPath, with an XPath expression that's getting to any part of the payload of that message, you can route messages to the right kind of service and the right kind of host. So it's this really very flexible discussion around this simple service that you can include in your apps. And that's an easy way to do versioning. So you can have, whether it's part of the header of the message or just part of the payload, where you have this is a version 1 or version 2, you can easily route that to the right host, where you say, I'm going to actually put a new service on a new host, and this is only for my version 2, but I know I have clients that are still going to be accessing version 1, so I'll just put this routing service in front of it, and it'll route things appropriately to whichever service I need without going back and changing the client. So we have some interesting prototypes and demos for how that works.
You actually showed that at the PDC in your demo, right?
Yeah,
that's a good video to go see if you want kind of that basic overview of all of Dublin. Go back and find Dan's talk.
That's right. It was called, a Lap Around Dublin? Okay.
We'll do it again at Tech Ready. Yeah. We'll do it again at Tech Ed, probably, something like it.
Yeah.
We'll continue to update the talk a bit, but it'll be the same kind of...
Now, one of the other things that has been challenging for people, I think, was with workflows and persistence, and people often ask me, well, how do I make this work on a farm?
Right.
Well, I got a farm of all these servers, they want to do workflows. So I send a message to this server, it starts a workflow, gets a little ways into it, then it persists because it's waiting on something.
Yes.
Then another message comes, but it doesn't go to this server, it gets routed over to this one. And then moments later, another message that's meant for the same workflow comes to this one.
Yes.
Now I got two nodes that are going to contend over this thing. Our simple solution that we shipped in .NET 3.5 for the persistence provider used kind of a simple way of you know, the first one gets it, kind of locks it, and then, but this other message, you know, would just get thrown away.
It's going to be an exception.
Yeah, because it, yeah. So we end up throwing that away. The client would have to know, oh, I got thrown away, I got to retry
that exception,
it, right?
Right.
That was tough because very often the people who are sending you messages are either a packaged app, maybe you can't change it, or the guys who own it are too busy to change it or whatever.
So they just perceive it as a failure to their client.
Right. They say, like, your service is screwed up, you know, but it's not my fault, you know.
Right. Just try it again.
So then the answer is, oh, wow, this just doesn't scale. Too bad workflow doesn't scale. Of course, it still scales great, but there's some cases where you would get this exception. So we've done the simplest thing in this version, which is don't fail. Mm-hmm. Which is, hey, a simple load balancer in front of a number of different hosts. Workflows can run on any host. We don't care. A host will take a lock. If a message comes in that is really, you know, meant for that, it's you know, for that same instance, it'll now just wait. It'll sit and wait. And as soon as that lock is given up, now the new host can take a lock. And that works great in a lot of scenarios. A lot of the human workflow, sort of slower scenarios where you're not getting tons of messages all correlated to the same instance.
Right.
When you have that, and if you spray that on a farm, that's a pretty tough performance hit when you actually have everybody waiting for instances. You want to route all those to the same instance so all those can be processed without moving around. But in scenarios where you've got, you know, messages coming in not so fast and they can be sprayed at any host, this is a great mechanism because now all of them will just wait. When that lock is given up, then it'll just, you know, next host will grab the lock, but it won't fail. That's part of the Dublin experience. Again, we found places where it didn't just work, and we said, well, we want it to just work without having to do a whole bunch of machinery or config or writing more code.
Right, right.
But we know we have further to go there. Yeah. We're just getting kind of the first class of kind of simple types of scenarios to work right now, and then we'll go beyond that later.
We have a sample, for example, that does routing of messages. So you can think of our current mechanism as routing the data or routing the instance. And so basically whatever host has the message will just grab the data for that, the instance for that message. You can also think of it as routing the messages to where the data is. Both approaches, depending on the scenario, are perfectly valid and great. We have a sample that actually does routing of messages as well. We'll probably include it with our sample list. And so for when people say, I have a scenario that's exactly as you described, where I'm getting lots of highly correlated messages very quickly, and I don't want to just spray them across and have them each, because you'll thrash a little bit. We know what that performance curve looks like. We have the sample that they'll just use to go ahead and route messages to the same host.
Okay.
And now the performance just scales linearly. Looks good.
Great. Now, you've talked about things that are going to ship in the framework, and by that we mean .NET 4.
That's right.
Right.
Dev 10.
And there are other pieces that are going to ship in some other way. So in Windows, right? In Windows Server. So how does this timing line up? I mean, .NET 4 is going to ship first then, or what?
So .NET 4 will ship, and then we'll ship shortly after that. And we're going to support, you know, Windows Server 2008 R2.
Okay. Right?
And so we'll be an out-of-band component for Windows Server on our first release because we're going to be, they release before us.
Okay.
And then after that, we'll be in the Windows Server box.
Okay.
And so, so what that means is, you know, we're working a lot also. We haven't talked about it much on our setup and installation experience. And so one of the things we need to do, especially in this release, is make it really easy to go get Dublin installed and get all of the dependencies we need installed as well. One of those big dependencies is .NET 4.0.
Right.
And so we'll help you get it onto the machine, and then we'll integrate this into, and it'll pop up inside the server manager and the app server role of Windows Server. So we'll get as deeply an integrated experience as we can with this release, even though we're shipping out of band.
And will it run on Windows 7 then also for dev machine? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And Vista.
Windows Vista. Yeah, and Win2K8.
That's right.
And Win2K8.
Win2K8, then 2K8 R2, and then and Win8, which would be the next version. Now you should see us completely embedded in the Windows stream, not a separate download. But we like to think in the same way that IIS does. Again, we're trying to align pretty closely with IIS. We think that's an important aspect to what this should look like for the customer. And so as you look at the way IIS does things, they line up with Windows shipping vehicles, but then they have a lot of tools to ship out of band available through the website. And that's the way we think of the world, which is let's get core value, let's keep up with the Windows train. It's an important part of the way we look at the world as being a great part of Windows, and then having available tools and things for the community outside and out of band. And so we can move much faster on some of the tools that surround it.
So now a lot of people have heard that workflow in .NET 4 is a new workflow. Mm-hmm. And so they might be thinking, well, I've got a workflow service maybe in .NET 3.5. Can I use Dublin with that? Does that work?
It will run. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the value that .NET, that Dublin accrues to .NET won't work with 3.5 workflows that are running in the 3.5 environment. So think of it as side-by-side. Those things will work. But then when you go and say, I'd like to see what instances are running, I'd like to pause and terminate and start, those are going to work with the .NET 4 workflows in that environment.
Okay.
So it's more limited when you're going to backward compatibility. Mm-hmm. We're really focused on making that .NET 4 experience great. And then as we go, we'll look at more and more at how we deal with workflows that are running. But it'll all work, and so nothing breaks. And so we're trying to keep as much value as we can accruing to services that are coming in 3.5. A lot of the monitoring stuff should just work either way. So it depends. You can run a .NET 3.5 service, WCF 3.5 service, in a 4.0 environment, and then does the monitoring stuff kick in, and can I see what's happening? And the answer should be yes. And so we're working hard to make that true. But for .NET 4, with the changes in workflow, that's a little harder for us, and so we're mostly focused on.
So that's let me make sure I understood you correctly. The .NET 3.5 stack is being moved forward, so it runs in .NET 4.0.
Right.
So it's taking advantage of running in that environment. And in the case where it's running under the .NET 4 stack, it will get the additional value?
Some of the additional value. Like the instrumentation for 3.5 workflows isn't the same as
4.0.
So you're not going to get some of the instrumentation. You're not going to get some of the value. Some of the ability to deal with those workflows. So in workflow, again, think of .NET 3.5 as running, you know, just like they've always run, but it's running in a slightly different engine.
So it's not
instrumented in the same way. It's not controllable in the same way. So we often say we don't do a lot of support for .NET for 3.5 workflows,
right?
But it all still works. So is one of the reasons to really think hard about migrating to 4.0 is you get a lot of this value in the way we've connected and integrated in with the engine, and in the Dublin tools that you've got available in .NET 4.
Okay. So now I'm sure a lot of people watching this are like, cool, man, I want to get my hands on this and I'll try it out. Can I go download this somewhere? I don't think it's available yet, right?
Well, we did a big release at the PDC. We gave it to the PDC attendees.
Yeah.
And so we got a lot of interest and traffic out of that, and so that was good.
Okay.
Our next release, we're actually in the midst of locking our final days of our planning for our milestone that we're going to start coding on next week. And we're going to do a CTP release after that.
Okay.
So, you know, think summer time frame.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We'll have something.
You'll see it come out.
Okay. Okay, great.
Pay close attention to the .NET, to the Dev10 train.
Okay.
We're closely aligned with that Dev10 train. So when you see that train head into destination and publishing schedules, you'll be able to infer schedules for Dublin off of that, because we're pretty closely tied since we ship so many things in the framework and we connect so closely to it. And we're pretty closely aligned to that schedule.
Now, I've talked to people who are, you know, kind of planning their release schedules for their projects and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Some are already starting to work on .NET 4 in very, very early stages, you know. And they're thinking, should I take a dependency on Dublin or not for my solution? You know, maybe if I want to ship my solution, you know, day one that .NET 4 drops, will I be able to do that?
We'll have public availability of a build of Dublin. We won't be released in the same exact date, but we do say, the way we think about it is we're going to ship in the wave of the .NET 4.0 release.
Okay.
So within a number of months afterwards, we'll be RTW'd.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, for us it is an RTW instead of RTM. The RTW dates aren't the same, but we are trying to target production quality betas for around the same time. So when people say, wow, I got an RTM for Dev10 and I want to be able to just come out shipping, can I have a production level beta? Can I get in the TAP program, in the early adopters program, work closely with the team to make sure that my scenarios are supported?
Right.
That's all fine. We have TAP programs. We encourage people to connect with Channel 9, to send email if you want to get connected. We have people that can get connected with you for TAP programs and early adopter programs that can help you with that. And so we will, as part of our program and as part of our normal course of events in getting the product out the door, we will have customers running live on Dublin around the time that Dev 10 is shipping and .NET 4 is shipping. We will want to have customers live in production, so we'll be working closely with a set of customers in that way.
Okay, great. So, if you care about this, you can just leave a little comment on this episode there on Channel 9. You just go and say, hey, I really want to get involved in those customer programs you're talking about. You know, sign me up and, you know, who knows? Maybe someone will come to
you. We'll get someone in touch with you. That's right.
All right. Hey, Ford and Dan, thank you so much for joining me today. And for Endpoint TV, I'm Ron Jacobs.